Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. After a short hiatus, I'm back from vacation and the podcast is back. Today, I have the honor of talking with Dave Kemp. Dave leads business development for Oak Tree Products and is a well-known podcast host for his Future Ear podcast, and he's an industry thought leader in hearables and voice. I'm super excited to talk to Dave today. Dave, please introduce yourself.
Awesome. Thank you, Roger. It is great to be here. The first time I ever met you is way back when. You're in the group of the first voice people that I ever met, which was at the, which was the Alexa conference, which is now Project Voice. The one that was, I think it was in 2018 when it was in the Chattanooga Public Library. So I have like this deep soft spot for all the people I met there because they really are what I think of as the nexus of this whole voice community. It's where it's, it felt like the nucleus. So anyway, it's great to be here. Like you said, I am the director of business development at Oak Tree Products. So quick background on Oak Tree and I'll kind of lead into how I got into voice. So Oak Tree Products is a distributor of clinical supplies to the hearing health professional. So you think of hearing health professionals being audiologists, ENT doctors. So the primary solution that professional prescribes to their patients, typically hearing aids. And so when I came into the fold here at Oak Tree back in 2016, full time, one of the things that was happening was that all of the hearing aids that were entering into the market were Bluetooth enabled. And so what was really interesting to me was to think, okay, so now you have these sort of internet connected hearing aids that are capable of all types of new use cases. And I started to go down a rabbit hole and I was exposed to the whole voice world one way or another. I think it was either Bradley Metrock or Brett Kinsella or Brian Romilly. You know, one of these guys were tweeting and I was real active on Twitter and I kind of started to buy into this idea of like, this is really interesting. And my whole thought all along was, okay, they start with smart speakers as the home. That's how I thought of them. And eventually those voice assistants, wouldn't it be great if they migrated to my world? And they were kind of like existing in hearing aids as a modality. And so that's why I started to come around was to understand like the legitimacy of this. Is first of all, from a underlying technology standpoint, what's the state of these things? So really kind of wrapping my head around that and understanding the feasibility of like, could this actually happen where one day we have hearing aids that more or less house, you know, Alexa, Bixby, Google Assistant, Siri, all these different things. And so that's how I came to kind of like make myself known in this space was I came from this background of hearing health. And that's obviously, it sort of coincided with the emergence of AirPods. And so AirPods took off and I've always had this passion of emerging technology. So like really kind of situating myself into this intersection of hearables, hearing aids, the form factor of this like on-the-go modality combined with this new exciting use case for them, which is the voice user interface, voice assistants, and this ability to kind of like interface with your technology on the go through your in-the-ear device. And so that's how I came to be involved in this whole space.
Awesome. You know, I thinking about that Alexa conference, when the history of the voice industry is written, something is going to be written. There's going to be maybe a paragraph or two or maybe a little bit more about the 2018 Alexa conference because there was about 100 of us in the Chattanooga Public Library. I remember it was darn cold.
Yes, it was.
Especially for a California boy like me. But that's where I met you. The first time I met Bradley, Brian Romilly, Mark Tucker. It's just like a who's who of voice people. Funny thing is, wasn't that long ago? Mm-hmm. But boy, it seems like a long while ago as far as what's happened in the industry.
Well, in the world, I mean, I think we all aged about 5 years over the course of the last year and a half. So you're right. Like it was only 3 years ago. Are we sure about that? Like it feels like it was about a decade ago, but I'm with you. I really have fond memories of that, getting to kind of familiarize myself with everybody. And what's been amazing is to see, you know, over the course of these last few years, who's gone on to do what. And it's just been really cool to feel like we were on the ground floor of something special and to continue to see this whole thing unfold in all the different ways that it has. So I'm right there with you.
Cool. So tell me a little bit more about your background. So you say you joined Oak Tree in 2016, I believe. What was your background before that? What led you into working with Oak Tree? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Okay, so I should preface that Oak Tree is actually my family company. I'm second generation, so my parents started it. Kind of a crazy story. They started it when, so I'm the youngest of three. My siblings were all 3 years apart. I was 3 years old. My brother was six and my sister was nine. So, you know, they had three kids under 10. And so the whole way this business started was my dad was a pharmaceutical sales rep and he was a product manager and his product was Debrox, which is a earwax softener. And in a really roundabout way, he came to realize that kind of in the early 90s, late 80s, there was this subset of hearing professionals called audiologists that were about to be able to start performing cerumen removal, which is earwax removal. And so he thought, wouldn't it make sense to start targeting this professional with Debrox? And the powers that be at Gaviscon or wherever he was, they said, you know, no, because we don't want to upset the apple cart and we don't want to piss off the ENT doctors. And so he said, all right, that's fine. And ultimately he took it upon himself to launch Oak Tree Products. And at the time it was just going to be a single product company. And he thought he was going to get his white label version of this in Walmart and CVS and all these different places. Lo and behold, that did not pan out. But what he realized is that there was sort of a little bit of a gap in the market with on the distributor side. And so that's how, like, kind of the genesis of the whole Oak Tree story was they realized, okay, there's a real niche here that we can go after. And slowly but surely, we became the biggest supplier over the course of 30 years to this industry. And so I've always, like, through osmosis, been involved in this area. Like, it's almost been a sixth family member where it's like, we have the five of us plus Oak Tree and Oak, you know, so it's always present at dinner talk and stuff like that. So I was always really, really familiar with this industry. And so I went off after I graduated college in 2012. I moved up to Chicago. I've always had this deep-rooted passion for technology. So I was selling software in Chicago, did that for 5 years. And then ultimately I decided I wanted to move home and come into the fold and I wanted to join Oak Tree. Today, like I said, we're second generation. My parents have both retired and it's been the process of transitioning to my brother and I and some other family members that we have here. But the really cool thing about it is that we've always at Oak Tree, because our customer base is this medical professional. At the end of the day, we're selling things, right? Like we're buying things and we're selling things. And we always want to provide more value than that. And so one of the ways that we've always tried to do that is through thought leadership and taking information and distilling it down and understanding that these are busy medical professionals that don't have nearly as much time. And so again, that brings me back to how I got involved in this space was I looked at kind of like, what am I good at? What are my passions? I have a degree in journalism. That's why I'm really active on, you know, social, and I do a lot of content production, is that's like my forte from an education standpoint. And then my passions in technology. And so I blended those two and I said, I will be more than happy to wear this hat and be a thought leader as it pertains to technology for this industry. And I kind of lucked out because in 2016 was kind of right at the onset where this industry started to get kind of a lot of movement. And here we are now. And I always say this, like, it's something that you don't think about. It's more obvious now because of the just explosion of AirPods. But this, I think wearables in general are a really, really interesting space that are kind of really starting to come into their own. And hearing aids by extension of that are kind of the most sophisticated wearable out there. And so that's why I'm really fortunate in that regard, because it's exactly where I want to be with, you know, being able to kind of digest all this information and bring it back to my industry and say, hey, look, and that's what I do a lot is I'll do, like I did a series of webinars earlier this year where I was presenting all around this idea of like voice assistance in your hearing aids. And it's really resonating with a lot of these audiologists, a lot of these hearing professionals, where they're starting to see, okay, this is an exciting new use case that really might appeal to the patient demographic that wears hearing aids. And so now what my mission is, I want to make the voice industry really aware that there's this interest that exists mm-hmm. in my world. And so you have an opportunity to build stuff for this. And that's, I'm trying to kind of create a bridge between the two.
Awesome. It's interesting when there's two industries. There is a marriage that needs to happen there, but it's not necessarily evident on either side.
Exactly.
That marriage needs to happen, or that marriage is fruitful for both. And I think you're right along those lines. So actually, I always love to ask people, what was the very first thing you did with the voice? When, so you discovered you were working with hearables and that, or hearing aids and parts for those. And you talked about 2016. What was your first voice assistant you used? Or what was your first experience?
I remember I played around with Siri when it first came out. Like I'd always, not always, but I think like I got my first iPhone must have been like a Series 4 or something like that. I was in college at the time and, you know, I like used a flip phone before that. So I do remember it like, you know, I was real prone to playing around with all the different bells and whistles. So I do remember early on, probably 2013-ish, I was using Siri a little bit. So that was like my first exposure. But I will say that I got like the big Alexa cylinder, and mm-hmm. that was the first device I had. And the primary use case I used it for was music. And I just remember thinking to myself, this is generation one and it's good. And I remember thinking, what's this? The trajectory of this thing's actually probably going to catch people off guard in the way that it really did, because I remember just thinking it was a lot better than I was anticipating. And I think that the standards are so high because we're comparing everything to mobile, and like mobile's still like really, it's compelling in a lot of regards. But I just remember having that distinct feeling of, I remember the first iPhone that I was exposed to and a lot of the kind of feelings of it. And then comparing it apples to this in terms of like first generation and thinking to myself that this was better than I was anticipating.
So Dave, you started talking about hearing aids and voice, and you said there's a marriage happening there. Tell me more about what you're thinking about hearing aids and voice and what the opportunities are there.
Okay, so I would say the first thing to really understand is the patient demographic, right? And this is kind of obvious, is who wears hearing aids? Old people. That's what people will say. But I would say that like the most interesting thing, one of the most like visceral experiences I had in this whole space was the second Alexa conference. So the first time that it was still Alexa conference, it was 2019, and Davis Park was there from Front Porch, which is a retirement facility that's along the West Coast. And they had just been trialing this pilot of putting Alexa devices in their residents' homes. And the feedback of it was, in essence, really positive, and the anecdotal testimonials that he had sort of outlined in this white paper, and you can still find it online if you just search like Front Porch Alexa pilot, was a whole lot of these older adults that were aging in place or living in these retirement facilities. And they were saying things like, it makes me feel empowered. It makes me feel like I have this new ability to communicate with my technology. And that was so visceral for me, because in the world of hearing aids, we have this like really deep understanding that this is a marginalized group by and large. Like one of the biggest concerns with Bluetooth hearing aids was the fact that they're Bluetooth and that would cause so many technical issues. And I think this misrepresentation, though, this is a demographic of people that are not savvy enough to navigate technology. And so I took these two kind of disparate thoughts, and I started to think about them in conjunction. And what I started to think was, I think maybe what's going on isn't that this is a group that's necessarily not capable of interfacing with technology. I think that the interfaces that we're presenting with them with are just inherently bad. So you think about the web, right? Like, not the easiest thing to navigate unless you're sort of trained on it. Like I'm a native because I'm born in 89. So I'm a millennial. I grew up with technology by and large. Like I had a desktop computer in my home, and then I was conditioned into the AIM era, AIM, and then Facebook, and then mobile and everything beyond. And every person that is younger than me is even more savvy, right? So I think that most people get this. The few generations above me, like maybe not quite as native, but still have a pretty good sense because of the way that they were forced into it through work or whatever. So you have these older adults that were never exposed to the web by and large. And then we present them with, okay, here's this like mass market item, which is your smartphone. Well, what are the limitations there? You have this small piece of glass that you have to tap on. Okay, so if you're 70 plus, 80 plus, chances are you have a lot of age-related issues. Your sight's deteriorated. You've got dexterity issues. You got mobility issues. It's just not a great interface. It's actually a more challenging interface. And so suddenly what you do is you present somebody with a seriously like just a standard Alexa device, just not even multimodal, nothing other than just this sphere or this big cylinder. And you just give them a quick basic rundown of here's how to use it. And again, going back to this Davis Park front porch pilot, I feel like this is still kind of flying under the radar, which is these are people that are seriously blown away by this. And what they're blown away by is like their first real interaction with technology by and large. It's the ability to play a song. Chances are this is a generation of people that have never experienced any other way of doing that other than their car radio or their home radio. And so you're kind of like, it seems trivial to somebody my age because it's like, well, I've always done that with my phone or with my PC, whatever. But this is a generation that's completely foreign to this. And so I think that is, for me, like that was like such an aha moment because I kept thinking to myself, okay, now let's think about this. So if you have all this great interfacing ability and you have the voice assistant can be the interface rather than touch, tap, and swipe, you could just interface with your phone, you could interface with your smart speaker, whatever, for a lot of simple tasks. And I think that what might seem trivial to younger generations is actually really profound for older generations. And that's where I've always thought that in a way, these first generations, like we've heard of people that mention this kind of barbell usage where it's really young people, it's like kids, 5 and under, and it's older adults. And the older adults, I think, are so uniquely positioned for this because, again, it just goes to this whole idea of now put that in a hearing aid. This device that you wear for, you know, it's designed to be worn sun up, sun down until you go to bed when you take it out to charge it. And you can just start to think about like you get them used to, okay, it's the Brett Kinsella thing. I mention this all the time where it's the whole habituation. So the training wheel effect, starting them off and helping them to understand those really simple, basic use cases, but graduating into more sophisticated levels. And this is where I would really challenge this whole status quo that this is a generation that's not capable of doing that. I actually really disagree with that. I think that they're more than capable of understanding how to do this. And I think that they're really open to it because, again, you're taking a group that has been so marginalized by technology forever and you're bringing them off the sidelines and you're actually giving them something that's conducive to them. And I think that's really, really powerful.
That's so powerful. It's because the interface is a human way of interfacing. Mm-hmm. Unlike any other human-computer interface, I had to learn to type, I had to learn to swipe, I had to learn to do interface with that. And I learned to do it. I'm the age where we learned to do that, and so are you, and we got used to it. My kids are even better at it than I am, right? I call them, they're teenagers, I call them the touch generation. Mm-hmm. And I call the real young kids, I think they're the voice generation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Katie McMahon calls them Gen V.
Gen V, I love that. But you're right about, so there's a whole generation who really, they didn't grow up with technology. And they're pretty intimidated. I'm tech support for my in-laws. So,
exactly.
And I see what goes on. Yeah, and I see what goes on. And sometimes it's frustrating, but then I get it. I remember getting a voices, I just got a little Alexa puck from my in-laws, my wife's parents, and they love it. And I'm like, so my father-in-law, he's a tech phobic, right? He doesn't like it. And this is the guy who wouldn't update his iPhone because they changed the interface on it. He's like, I'm never updating that thing, right?
Yeah.
He's right, like six generations back. But he's like, oh, this is cool. I can get the Giants and 49ers scores, right? So that was the cool thing at first to him. And then you see him using it more and more. And then I'll tell you a story that really struck me about the older generation. I have an aunt who's she's getting up there and she's legally blind. And I went and visited, she lives in Florida, and I went to visit her actually just before the pandemic. And I mean, she should be in an Apple commercial about how to use Siri. She was doing things I didn't even know Siri could do half the stuff she was doing. She was legally blind, so she would use it to communicate, make calls, set reminders, get information. I mean, that literally her day-to-day kind of living was heavily influenced by Siri. I'd never seen anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it just blew me away. And this is really the generation that maybe has the greatest opportunity to benefit from voice. And yet in the voice industry, we don't talk that much about it, probably because there's not a lot of people that generation in the voice industry. Most of them are retired or they're not in the tech industry. But yeah, I'm totally with you. And so that makes a ton of sense. And their hearing challenges. So they get hearing aids. Boom, it's in your ear.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you bought it because your hearing was challenged. But all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I can talk to it and I can get things done. Wow. That's pretty powerful. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so this is it, right? Like I call it the Trojan horse effect, right? Because nobody's buying them for this reason, but this is something I always communicate to whenever I have an opportunity to present to the hearing professionals. This is the big point that I try to make is this is like free value. You get to increase your value proposition for free, more or less. And it's all through education. And so I'm like, look around your waiting room. How many people out there are sending a text message with their voice? My dad is in his 60s and he plays golf with some guys that are in their 70s. And he's like, these guys, the only way they text is through their voice. And I'm like, I think that's probably the way a lot of these people do. And I've had a lot of these conversations with Andy Bellavia, my buddy who's like my hearables right-hand man. And he created this awesome video for me because he wears these Bluetooth connected hearing aids. They're called Phonak Marvels. So it's one of these brands. And, so he has an Android phone and he talks to Google Assistant all day. And it's like lots of different things. And he created this 2.5 minute video for me so that I can present it. And it's awesome. And it's send a text message, play this song. What song is this? It's navigate me here, do these things. And so I've always thought, okay, so if you think of, you can use the jobs to be done framework, like the Clayton Christensen thing, where you look at your phone as like, every day you're going into your phone. I mean, I think the average is like 80 to 100 times. I'm not sure where you fall on that spectrum, but I'm probably there, unfortunately. But you think about, really intentionally, like, why did I just go into my phone? And a lot of the time it's for one very specific thing. It might be for a particular application. And this is where I've always thought like the sweet spot is for voice assistants is it's not like it's going to happen overnight. I think it's more of picking things off one by one. So maybe over the course of time, you start to get familiar with, like you said, your father-in-law, where it's checking scores, so you start to kind of condition yourself or sending text messages or, checking the weather, whatever it might be. And so I just think that this is where the opportunity lies. And this is that's why I'm saying like older adults actually, I think are the most prone to move as much over as possible right now. Granted, there's obviously things that your phone can do that that just don't have like an apples to apples comparison, like social media, a lot of the downtime on your phone, all those things. And I'm not really going to say that like the phone's going away anytime soon, but I think that what's exciting, the prospect is just kind of reducing the amount of time on your phone and getting that time back, being a little bit more heads up. And this is where I think like the hearing aid demographic might actually be the best place to start because, again, you have this captive audience that wears an all-day device that's willing to do these things because the incumbent interface is not really conducive to them. So you kind of have this perfect combination. And I continue to think it's just like you said, like there should be more focus around this group because this group, a lot of what gets built can then cascade over into, younger demographics and just like the more general population of users. So I would almost say that why aren't we looking at this group as the perfect group of early adopters for a lot of this different type of functionality? Because again, it's like you said, of course you're going to be met with some skepticism, maybe some weariness of this sounds almost like more technology. And so you're going to have to combat that a little bit. But to your point, like you said earlier, as soon as they start to kind of familiarize themselves with it and they get comfortable with it, it becomes the default mechanism by which they do that particular job, if you will.
It strikes me, when in the history of tech has the older generation been the
right?
The ones who will innovate or push the envelope? And we have it right here. We need to grasp it and accept that. We haven't quite figured that out because it's so completely foreign. I love what you were saying around getting something done. So one of the things I love, so 80, 100 times a day, and we've all had, I've opened my phone to get something done, and then 30 minutes later, I forgot what I needed to, because it's designed to suck you in. We all know social media designed to suck you in. But one of the beauties of voice is, boom, I want to get something done and I'm done with the tech. And in a way, less technology. voice enables us to use like and kind of humanizes us, right? Instead of walking around with a phone in my face, mm-hmm. I'm walking around, I ask technology to do something, but then I'm back talking to the person in front of me. I'm super excited about its ability to humanize us and escape that 30-minute time suck. I don't remember what I started doing, but there's great opportunity. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, like, so we've been talking a lot about hearing aids, but this is what I think is exciting about AirPods too is, and I'm using AirPods as a proxy for hearables, broadly speaking, because, you know, the cool thing is I remember really, because like, this is my world. So I'm so focused on it. And I remember thinking like when AirPods were really blowing up, I was like, I'm sounding blowing the whistle. I was like, take a look around, you know, and this is like probably 2017, 2018, where it's go into an airport and just start to look and you will see like, wow, these things are really proliferating at a clip. And so now like here we are and like it's magnified tenfold. I saw yesterday there was a report that said that it was from Future Source Consulting. So it's like one of these market insights companies. And they basically proclaimed hearables or like true wireless earbuds as being one of the biggest sort of like beneficiaries of the pandemic. Like that was one of the things that the most amount of people bought. And so like now you're going to just, they're everywhere. And so we've been so conditioned by Apple largely, but it's cascading into lots of different brands, lots of form factors too. But that's something that I think is kind of, again, flying under the radar a little bit is, you know, and it's something that like really only like an Apple or a Samsung or a Google can do is introduce these giant behavioral shifts. If you look at like AR, for example, like augmented reality is probably going to become really legitimate. But I think that people are underestimating the behavioral side, the psychology of will people actually wear these things? And I will say that like AirPods and wearing things in and around your ears for extended periods of time, we kind of take that for granted now. That was like a Herculean effort in order to do that because it was not a thing before. Usually you would wear headphones, wired headphones, or you had Bluetooth headphones, but they were kind of single use. And this coincides with the huge meteoric rise in streaming and the stuff that you now can do with those things, like why you even would wear those in the first place. But that again brings us back to this whole thing of, okay, here we are in 2021, and we now have this population of users that are wearing things on the go. And that's what's so exciting to me is it's like that, like from where I stand in my vantage is we've seen now these two sort of disparate technologies, voice, which started with stationary smart speakers, and then you had multimodal, and now you're starting to see it sort of become ambient, and it's becoming something where it's like in all kinds of different form factors, and hearables at the same time have become more and more capable of supporting these kinds of use cases. And now they've sort of met in the middle. And I really think that over the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to see so much movement between this intersection. I think that it's a perfect marriage because it provides you with that hands-free, eyes-free interface that matches the hearables form factor. And so that's where I'm like really focused right now is to figure out what are the right use cases to really have the developers focus on and build for. Because again, I don't think you can operate under the mentality of everything is superior in voice world or vice versa. I think that certain things really make sense for voice, especially in its current state. Maybe in time it will continue to expand. And like, I think that's where the challenge is to figure out, you know, what are those specific use cases that are the ones to really hone in on? You know, is it messaging? Is it, you know, what are the bulk things that people do with their phones for significant periods of time that a significant portion of people would be compelled to start using their voice for over their mobile interface?
You know, it's interesting. You talk about ambient computing and that's all about anywhere and everywhere. Well, if I got something in my ears, then it can be anywhere and everywhere, especially a hearing aid that will sit in my ears for hours and hours on end. And you increasingly see people, you know, walking on the street. My daughters leave their AirPods in for hours. So, because they're always consuming, but it's a consumption device right now. But I think what you're saying is there's an opportunity for it also to be a device to allow us to interface. And when you combine those, you start unlocking anywhere and everywhere I can talk or interact with these devices that are on my ears, boom, I start really unlocking ambient computing. And I don't know if anyone thought, when they think about ambient computing, I don't think about, you know, hearables, but maybe it's the huge unlock to ambient computing, or the closest thing we have to it, because it's probably on you as much or more than anything else.
And like, it's here too, right? So it's something where I think that when I first was looking at this space, I was skeptical of a number of things, but I still wanted to like make sure, like, it, because the promise of it, you know, whether it's the movie Her or whatever it might be, I just thought that these two things make so much sense in my mind, and I've kind of already gone through why. But I think that this idea of being able to, you know, and you kind of saw, like, with the Alexa Live, a lot of it was around it starting to introduce social features. So, again, the way I look at things is, like, the formative pieces are starting to kind of fall into place for a really interesting scenario to kind of unfold here, where you start to kind of have something that, if the voice assistant is the mediator between users, I think that can get really, really interesting. And you see what's happening with Bluetooth, like the next generation of Bluetooth, they see this coming too. I've had the good fortune to get to know Nick Hun, who is he's the actual analyst that works for the Bluetooth Special Interest Group, who coined the term hearable. So this guy is really, really knowledgeable about this space, and he is laser focused on the voice space as well, because he's thinking the same thing. Like, the way that they're building out the next generation of Bluetooth is very much designed around this idea that you're going to be kind of interacting with your voice assistant all day, every day. You know, the way that, like, it won't stop media, for example, you won't have to have it will more probably like tune it down and allow for you to issue a command. A lot of, you know, being able to interface in with other users with your sound. I just think that it's going to, I think, like, this whole voice space is really interesting to me because for a few reasons. One, it definitely feels like it's following the Gartner hype cycle. And I think we've been in the trough of disillusionment, and I think we're about to come out into the peak of enlightenment is what I think it's called. And so I think that part of it is, it's like wearables, where, you know, wearables started out with these extreme, you know, sort of expectations and stuff, but they were really like Fitbit and all that. It was kind of these glorified pedometers. They were step track counters and all this stuff. And they still actually managed to gain decent proliferation. And then in comes the Apple Watch. And what the Apple Watch and what Apple really recognized is that the big use case is that you have this computer that's worn on your skin all day, and you can actually collect a lot of really interesting health data, and you can build health applications for it. And there's other use cases, but that's, I think, the big one where they realize they're like, these are things now that the phone can't do. And that's where I think it's going to get really interesting, is to figure out what are the applications, and it might be a combination of things. It could be like voice plus hearables that the phone doesn't lend itself to. What are going to be the superior applications for one reason or another that just the phone can't do? And I think that's going to emerge here sooner than we think. And the main reason is because a lot of the underlying technology, both in the hearables world, but also in the voice world, are sort of maturing and percolating right now. And it feels like maybe we're not seeing as much progress as we wish. Things aren't coming to fruition in the way that we had wished. But I think that it's coming. It's just going to come about in a way that is probably different than just like this. It's going to come in one fell swoop. It's going to like just replace mobile, because I don't see that happening. I think it's going to happen in piecemeal, but it's going to be through these things where people are actually going to be saying to themselves, this is really cool, and I can't do this in any other modality.
Yeah, laptops didn't replace desktops. Mobile didn't replace laptops, right? But can I be so bold as to say, controversially, that we're talking about a post-mobile world? And that doesn't mean mobile goes away. It means with a focus of innovation. Shifts beyond mobile. We've been in mobile for quite a while around innovation, and maybe. And I love what you're saying, because the opportunity probably is bigger in a post-mobile world. I'd argue that mobile is stuck in a rut a little bit. It's the same shape, same form factor. People don't upgrade their phones as quickly as they used to, because it's not that different. So interesting. So I have to ask you. So I'm definitely not a spring chicken, and so my hearing, I don't need hearing aids, but I don't hear like crowded, noisy places. I don't hear as well as I used to, and so I start hearing about these things like, I know Apple calls it live listen. We Samsung call it amplify ambient sound, where the actual, you get the buds in, mm-hmm. and they're actually helping you hear. And I played with it and haven't really used it. But it seems like there's something there, right? Like it's like a junior hearing aid.
No, that's actually a good way to put it.
Well, I'm curious what your thoughts are on those.
So, okay. So here's the thing. You know, my podcast is largely focused around, like I've said, like kind of these different intersections of technology. And so it's not just voice. I talk a lot about hearing health. And what's happening in the hearing health space is this evolution, and it's really, really exciting, because if you think about hearing loss is a giant spectrum. It's not like everybody, like when you lose your hearing, it's not like a knob gets turned down. It's very, very specific to, you know, the type of hearing loss. We all have what is, you could best think of it analogous to almost like a fingerprint. Some of these technology companies are calling them like your earprint, your ear ID. And so what we're seeing is that historically, really, it's been a one-size-fits-all type thing, where the only option that you had as your hearing started to depreciate was you could go get a hearing aid. There's another subset of devices called personal sound amplifiers, and I'm not going to get into them because they're just not great. But what's happened is, you know, so hearing aids are notoriously expensive. They're not covered by insurance. And so through a number of reasons, there hasn't been a real penetration of these devices. And so hearing loss remains this pervasive problem that's getting worse, that's global. It's bad. And what's scary is that it's linked now to a lot of cognitive issues, you know, cognitive decline, which also is associated with like social isolation. And that makes sense, because as your hearing starts to deteriorate, you're kind of prone to start to withdraw because you can't hear the conversation, and your brain is a muscle. So it then starts to go through atrophy. And so ultimately what we're looking at is, we've primarily up until a few years ago, really, you know, the only people that have been catered to more or less are people with like these moderate to severe hearing losses. And the problem is that with hearing loss, it's a progressive thing. Most people have sensory neural hearing loss, which means that it's like a progressive thing, just kind of depreciates slowly. And so the exciting thing is that now what we're starting to see through a number of different combinations of technology and innovation and service delivery models is that we have these really cool, compelling solutions that are geared toward people that are on the lower end of the spectrum, on their early onset of this, right? So mild losses, even moderate losses. And so you have a bunch of these companies that are coming out that are earbud companies, like they're hearable companies with hearing augmentation features. So you have an app and you do this, basically you take this test and it will measure your hearing loss, and then it will match your profile, and it will basically increase certain frequencies. So maybe I have a low frequency loss, so I don't hear low baritone voices, whereas you might have a high frequency loss. So we have two very different types of losses. It's not just turning up the knob, it's increasing certain frequencies. And so what we're ultimately looking at is, you now have companies like Apple, Samsung, Google, Facebook, you know, where they're coming in and they're presenting all kinds of new solutions. And so AirPods is a really good example of this, where they're taking the AirPods Pro and they're basically like layering on little features that you can do to kind of have this a rudimentary offering of this. So like they have beamforming, which basically takes the microphones and they position them in such a way so that like you have this directionality. So when you're talking to somebody and it's one-on-one here, it's going to actually kind of drown out the background noise behind me, the background noise behind you, and it's going to hone in on our voices so that I'm really like only picking up the person that I'm speaking with. Because a lot of people have like a very specific problem, which is I have trouble hearing people in a loud situation called speech and noise. And so, you know, ultimately what we're looking at is, it's not like AirPods or any of these things are setting out to replace hearing aids. They're actually coming to enter in and cater to people that aren't ready for hearing aids, but are ready to start treating their hearing loss. And that's what's really, really exciting. And I've been talking a lot about this on my podcast, is like this whole idea of, I really feel strongly that we're at the kind of the impetus of, or like the beginning of this new era, where it's a lot like what we were saying with the hearing aids and having voice assistant activation in it. It's like you buy AirPods Pro, and then you see a commercial and you're like, I had no idea that that application existed. And I go into my settings and I turn it on, and suddenly I'm like, this is great. I haven't heard these sounds in years, because again, it's these progressive losses that you just slowly start to lose it. You can't hear the birds anymore. You kind of forgot that you can't hear the birds. And then you turn this thing on and you're like, oh my God, I hear the birds chirping again. And so that makes you feel like, okay, I definitely have a hearing loss and I want to go treat this a little bit. And that's what's so exciting to me is, again, how does this kind of come full circle with voice? Well, the reason it comes full circle is you now have a population that has kind of slowly been conditioned through AirPods and all these other things to wear things in and around their ears. And then they're going to start to layer on these really compelling use cases to wear things in your ears for long periods of time, because you have hearing augmentation, whatever that might be. And then suddenly we now have a population that's swelling, that is wearing things in and around their ears for extended periods of time. And those are the ones that are really, truly the candidates for this Trojan horse of, like, now these are people that have voice assistants literally on their person, in their ear, all day, every day. And what can we build for them? That's how hearing loss kind of comes into the fold.
No, fascinating. It makes so much sense. You know, it struck me as I was thinking, we've all accepted vision loss, right? People, eyeglasses, people get, you go get new, right? And it's just something that we accept. But there's this kind of chasm of hearing loss. Until it gets really bad, you don't do anything. And there's a bit of a stigma about hearing aids. And so one of the things I'm excited to hear you say this is this, people, you need it in certain situations, or like you said, it's certain frequencies, right? And I'll admit, like when it's crowdy, you know, in a loud restaurant, I don't hear the person talking to me as well as I used to, right? And so I think this is super exciting. And then it's the Trojan horse to, okay, man, now I start using, I have these devices I'm wearing all the time. Okay, now I can start doing some cool ambient computing voice capabilities with them. So,
and this is where everything has always kind of been so fascinating to me, is that they really are kind of interconnected in a lot of different ways. And I think they're all really mutually beneficial, because, okay, so you think about this whole idea of, okay, so you just mentioned the stigma. I would almost say that there's three big problems as it comes to treating hearing loss at scale. It's price, it's stigma, and it's basically access to the devices and the service and the solutions. And I could talk at length about all these, but the stigma piece is really, really interesting, because again, it goes to this whole idea of like, okay, so again, we're wearing AirPods in and around our ears for a long period of time, things that look like them. And what we're really getting to is now you have hearing aids that actually are being built and they look like earbuds. And so we're very close to this future where the lines are blurring big time, where it's really hard to tell who's wearing what. And my big hope is that because you're going to have a lot of young people, a lot of tech aficionados, and a lot of people that are just like, they have this kind of mild hearing loss and they want that hearing augmentation in certain settings, you're going to get to a point where it's going to be really hard to tell who's wearing what for what. And so ultimately, I think that translates to, it's going to be like glasses, where it's like, are those designer glasses or are those prescription lenses? I don't care. And that's where it should ultimately get to, is that we don't care. And that's, I think, a huge boon for hearing solution adoption, is that I hope that big detractor just slowly becomes mitigated over time.
I love that. If the form factor changes, if it looks like I got AirPods, but they're really hearing aids, or the two blend together,
right,
then that stigma goes away. That's a great idea. All right, Dave, I think you and I could talk for hours about this, but I do want to switch gears. You are a well-known podcaster. You're prolific. I just saw you're in your 70-something episode of Future Era.
77.
All right. 77. Tell me about the start of this. When did you start podcasting? What was the genesis of starting a podcast?
So I will say I definitely want to shout out both Bradley Metrock and Brett Kinsella because they were really nice and invited me on their podcast. And when I got a taste of it, I was like, this is awesome. I went on This Week in Voice and I was like, you know, with Bradley and I just really, it was such an awesome experience. And it made me realize like this whole format of conversation is really lost in what we need, I think, right now. I think it's a fantastic way to have intelligent discourse in an age where we're so ADD. So that like podcasts really resonate with me because I think that it cuts through a lot of the sort of the transactional nature of, you know, 140 or 280 character tweet, even though I do love Twitter as well. That was the first start of it, was when I got invited on. And that's why for me with my podcast, I started it in 2019, right before the pandemic. So it was actually kind of perfect timing because it allowed for me to continue to build out like this network of people and connections, even during the pandemic. And really, like, I will say that the most rewarding part of podcasting is bringing people on and giving them a taste and kind of like paying it forward and giving people this opportunity to see, like, it's not that hard. And it's something that it's a fantastic way to build relationships with people. And that's what I love about it.
Wow. Words stolen right out of my mouth. Fantastic way to build relationships and then kind of share a conversation. Exactly. Before you and I started, I was like, you know, I treat this as, we're going and grabbing a beer, but we're recording it. And treat it like that and just share it. Okay, if you've done 70 podcasts since 2019 or before, how many podcasts do you do? How often do you release a podcast?
I was doing one a week. Things got thrown off a little bit here because, as I mentioned to you before we started recording, I just recently got married. So that
huge congratulations to Dave. If you didn't know, he just got married. So give him a congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. So I'm now at like more of like every other week clip, but I prefer to do it once a week. And it is something where it's like, it's almost like religious for me, where it's, I love when I get to do a podcast. Like, it's my favorite thing of the week. I try to do one to two a week. And I love the prep that goes into it because I have to identify, okay, usually my process is what's interesting right now that I really want to talk about that I need to find the expert, right? And so like that's step one, identify what I want to talk about. Then I go and I seek out the person. And so that's always kind of a challenge and a game of figuring out how do I connect with the person that I really want to. And sometimes you can't that initial time. You have to find the connection that ultimately can introduce you to the connection that you want. So that's part of it. And the other thing I love is when you do a podcast, and I'm sure you can attest to this too, is it's not like it's like a single conversation. It starts to become a giant narrative. You know, things mm-hmm. build on one another. You kind of understand that, like, yes, there's probably some listeners that are coming and they're listening to that one specific episode, but you have a lot of people that are tuning in every single week. So you're mm-hmm. building a relationship with these listeners mm-hmm. and you get the opportunity to shape this conversation in an ongoing narrative story, mm-hmm. more or less. I mean, mm-hmm. is that how you felt too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's an ongoing, different guests, but it's an ongoing narrative and a story you're telling. And my favorite meetings of the week are any podcast interviews, right? This is my, yes. This will be my favorite meeting all week.
Yeah.
Because this is so fun, right?
Like, exactly. This is,
right? Just talking to someone and getting, I was going to say a podcast a week, there's a lot of work. Like, and this is the easy mm-hmm. part. This, right, we all know, is the conversation. I'm like, this is the fun, easy part. It's mm-hmm. the homework ahead of time, editing, getting it out, things like that. That's the work, but it is a fabulous way to really expand your thinking and meet new people and that. And it's almost, I feel like I'm friends with every podcast guest, even if I've never met them before, right? After they've been on my podcast, right? And it's just, I am.
So the thing I always say, I guess it's a well-kept secret or it's not a well-kept secret, but okay, so my title, I'm a business development person. Mm-hmm. The world of, when I was first out of college, I did a little bit of cold calling, will never do that again. And what's cold calling, right? You're trying to establish a relationship. I will tell you, I've had more success through the podcast from a business standpoint because you're building personal relationships. And it's just like you said, it's you can build these relationships and then, you know, you actually feel like you're on a personal level with these people. And it's, so again, I could go on and on and on. I've been doing it now for almost 2 years, and I think I'll legitimately do this for the rest of my life. Like, I know that might sound like hyperbole, but until something better comes along, it is the best way to grow a network of people, because every single week I'm able to do something, whether I'm on somebody's podcast like this, again, thank you for having me on, or I'm having somebody like you on, it gives you this opportunity to say, I now kind of know this person, you know, in a way that I'm not sure what else presents that opportunity other than maybe something where you're visiting that person in person.
Sure.
And that's where I mentioned earlier, where having the podcast during the pandemic, it saved me because it allowed for me to continue to do my job and build out this network and meet people and figure out who's who, who's the smartest person when it comes to this particular thing. And I totally agree with you too, where you said, this is the fun part. And I think that that's the joy for me is it's, I really look at it as how can I constantly get better? And there's a lot of homework that's involved. Like, you did a lot of homework here for this conversation. And so I would just say to anybody that's listening that might be interested in this, first of all, do it. And then second of all, look at it as like a serious commitment, not just a fly by night. Like, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a few of these. Really kind of figure out like what it is that you want to podcast about and start to figure out like, how do I make the conversation that I want to make unfold? Like, kind of start to envision what that conversation looks like. Who's going to be part of this conversation? Who are the right people? However you want to go about doing it. But that's my biggest advice, is take it really serious and lean into it and embrace it as like this incredible way in which you can build out a network of connections and really like strong connections that you'll have with you that you can then go back to and you can, you know, communicate with these people in any number of ways.
It's so true. The secret,
yeah, exactly.
The best networking secret out there is to podcast, right? Is to be a podcast host. I mean, it's so much more intimate.
Yeah.
And so much more, you really get to know the person, right? In the conversation beforehand and the podcast and that. And so I completely agree with you. And I think it's hard work, right? Yeah. It was something like 50% or 80% of podcasts don't go past 5 episodes, because you know, like, oh gosh, wow, this actually isn't, it's not just talking to people who record. You got to promote it and you got to do that. And you got to, and frankly, the first few podcasts, I listened to one, all, I was like, oh, got it. Now, and it's funny enough, I talked to the guests and they're like, oh, you were awesome. I was like, well, thank you, because I don't think I was very good back then. I'm still learning, you know, how to do this. But,
that's part of the awesome part about it is I'm the same way. I listened to some of mine and I sucked, but you get to get a little bit better every single time. And personally, like, I get a lot of joy out of that, is the incremental improvement, knowing that each and every time I'm getting a little bit better and not beating myself up over it, just knowing like, it's just kind of part of the game, you know? And ultimately you wind up like 77 episodes in, I can't wait till I'm 177 episodes in, where I get to look back and be like, I sucked then too. And I get a little bit better each and every time. So I look at it more of, that's, I think, a huge thing too, is like, be nice to yourself. Don't be so critical. It takes a lot of time. I mean, my podcast growth, like in terms of my audiences, it is just like a slow tick upward. Mm-hmm. And it's something where it's like, it doesn't just happen overnight. Like, it's definitely grown considerably, but it's not like, unless I feel like I was like famous or I was like really prominent or something like that, I'm not sure you have the ability to do that. So just let it happen and just put your head down and go to work and let the process happen, because the process is kind of the best part about it.
You know, be patient. And I know many people who they don't even look at their listener account. I do, because I'm curious about episodes that resonated or less or resonated less, and kind of growth, right? And this is on my goals for the year, right? So there's a professional thing going on there. But no, I think that's just be patient and let it happen. And if you're genuine and be patient, it'll grow. Fits and starts and starts and stops and things like that. Okay. But it'll grow and be happy, right? If you're talking to 100 people who love what you're talking about, that's a lot more fun than talking to 2,000 or thousands who are just kind of whatever.
Exactly.
Right. So don't worry about the size of the audience. It's kind of, is the audience engaged?
It sounds corny, but it is kind of the Field of Dreams thing. It's like, you know, if you build it, they will come. Like, people will seek you out. They'll find you. And that's where, again, it's all rooted in, are you actually passionate in this? Like, it's very obvious. Right. You can tell. It's subtle, but you can tell these things. You can figure out, like, very quickly, is this person genuinely interested in what they're talking about? And so I think that's a big part of it, is just kind of like figuring out what's your big thing that you care about, that you feel like you can go, you know, and do multiple of these and make it your own.
So Dave, because you're not busy enough, I noticed you just launched a second podcast, or maybe it's video and podcast, called This Week in Hearing. Tell me about This Week in Hearing.
No, thank you so much. It's brand new, and it's not just me. So this goes back to what I was saying earlier about paying it forward. I realized in my industry, like, there's a lot of really interesting people with interesting stuff to say, but not enough modern avenues for them to say it. And the reason being is, like, and I think this is probably, like, extremely pervasive across lots of different industries. Like, I'm in this medical oriented industry, a lot of researchers, a lot of, you know, basically doctors, they're not, like, really, their background isn't in strategic communications, right? And so what I thought was, okay, I've gotten this, like, I figured out podcasting to a sense, or to a degree. I've kind of gotten the ropes a little bit. And so This Week in Hearing it's designed to actually be a platform for people in the industry that don't really have, like, a podcast, but they have something, they have one really interesting area of background or whatever it might be that they want to talk about. And so basically it's a collection of people that are working in every facet of hearing. So whether it's hearing health, hearables, consumer audio, voice, you know, all of these different things, giving them the opportunity to come on, be your own moderator. I'll show you the ropes. Basically, the team and I that I'm working with, we'll do the post-production, we'll help promote it, all that stuff. We'll do the heavy lifting. We'll do a lot of the boring part. And, you know, all you have to do is come with the subject matter expertise and bring on some other people. It's actually been awesome. We launched it last week. I was for the inaugural episode, I did the moderation. And just kind of to set a blueprint and say, like, here's kind of the idea here. And we were really excited about the response, because we got a lot of people that came directly to us and said, I've been thinking about starting a podcast, but I don't really feel like I have 10 episodes worth of things, but I feel really passionate about this one thing. Can I come on? And so we're ecstatic about this, because it gives us this opportunity to, like I said, like, this idea of giving people a taste of it and letting them see, like, here's what it's like to actually do a podcast episode, and doing kind of the heavy lifting for them around the pre-production and the post-production. So that's the gist of it, is just to kind of empower people in, like, the worlds that I come from to bring their knowledge and their wisdom and impart it on us, and give them a sense of, here's kind of what this whole thing's like. And the hope is, like, that people will take this and run with it and be like, I'm going to now launch a podcast.
Awesome. Awesome. I didn't realize that. It's just a guest can go on and they have 30 minutes of something, or 60, whatever, talk about it, and they want to share it, but they don't know, as you said, it's a lot more intimidating to think, oh, shoot, I got to do an episode every couple weeks, or a weekly, and I got to do 10 episodes.
It's daunting. I mean,
it is daunting. Oh, I know it's daunting.
Launching a YouTube channel.
Yeah. When am I going to get my next guest? I have my own doubts. And it ends up being always easier than I think it's going to be, but it's definitely daunting. So as we're kind of wrapping up, I would love to ask you one of my favorite questions, my hidden gem question.
Okay.
So you can share a voice experience or a podcast or something that you really enjoy that you don't think enough people know about. What's a hidden gem you got?
Can I give you a business idea?
Oh, yeah. Oh, perfect. Love that.
Okay. All right. I've actually never shared this. I've thought about it, but I think this is the perfect time to share.
Business idea of Dave Kemp that's going to change the world.
And the reason I'm telling you is because I actually hope somebody's listening that can come and help me build this. And again, it seems kind of trivial, but it's something that I think would be a really good use case, is basically a golf app. Okay. So it would be a voice assistant. So when you're out playing golf, there are lots of new watches that show you your distance to the hole. Okay. So my thought is, if you have that and you have these voice assistant hearing aids, being able to say, Alexa or Bixby, what's my distance, you know, and or being able to basically interface with one of these different golf apps so that you could get kind of an analysis while you're playing of, you know, basically here's how far you are to the hole, here's the conditions of the green, just helping you play. Again, think about the patient demographic that wears hearing aids. A lot of people in Florida play a lot of golf. I think it could be a really powerful use case that could be really marketed toward this power user group of voice assistant hearing aid users. So anybody that has the wherewithal to help me build this thing, I know the people in the hearing aid space that I could connect you to. If you can help me to build this from the information that's gathered from, there's a lot of different apps out there that show you, they have like detailed information around each course, each hole. It's very granular. So it's a matter of parting that information and porting it over into the voice assistant space.
Great idea. Not only is the demographic good, but I always think of golf, and I'm not much of a golfer, but the few times I do, it's super social. So you're with people. So instead of your face being in a smartphone app, maybe you ask, maybe even share it. Maybe then there's a smart speaker or something where it's shared and everybody can hear it. There could be, that's a really cool idea.
I think like you're always, it's very, you know, accurate, like the GPS coordinate of this. That's another thing I think, like we were talking earlier, not to go off on a big tangent as we close, but we were saying earlier, what are going to be the use cases? And if you think about what were some of the big breakthroughs for mobile compared to the PC, it was on the go. But the other thing is it was a camera. And so I think like the big thing that might come from the kind of hearables voice assistant intersection is GPS, being able to have this really accurate understanding of where you are. And so there's a lot of navigation pieces, but there's a lot of other things too, where it's like this, where it's how far am I from the hole? You know, those kinds of things. What kind of iron should I use? Well, you typically hit, if you had your own personalized data in there, you know, you could log it and you could say that I hit a 7-iron 170 yards. So it could be like, you're 172 out, the wind conditions are like this, you should hit a 6-iron. You need a little bit more oomph with that shot. Right. So I don't know. It's a fun idea, but honestly, I think there might be legs to it. So if anybody is listening that could help me with this, please reach out or just build it on your own, because I think it would be pretty successful.
Wow, we could go on that tangent about GPS, because I start thinking about this whole kind of, and I think about a proactive voice assistant too.
Yes, we didn't even.
I notice you're doing this, you're here. I have some information that might be helpful or useful or that. Anyway, that's a topic for another conversation. But go ahead.
One thing about that, medication reminders, massive use case.
I'm not deep in the medical field, but I love talking to people about it, because the more you hear about it. You see your doctor very infrequently. I see my doctor once a year, but if I need to take a medication, remind me, or I had physical therapy because I had an issue and I'd forget to do it. And if something reminded me to do it or helped me do it, or I could keep track of it, that's a whole ball. And voice is the perfect interface for
totally.
That stuff.
And it knows, did I already do this today? Yes, you already did it today.
Right.
Because logged it.
Oh, right. Or even if the sensor's on, you did some exercise. Okay. That's podcast number two. Hey, Dave, what's a short-term prediction you have? Next year or two, I'll say in voice and hearables, right? And voice in the hearable space. What's something you think is going to happen? It's going to be interesting.
I think that I'm actually probably the most contrarian thing about my view is I think Apple's still going to be a huge player in this space. I know that this is the most tired thing ever, but I think that we're going to see, whether it be the next version of AirPods or something, I think is coming with Siri. And I think that could really lend itself to building for this whole intersection of voice plus hearables. And so I think that's my short-term prediction, is I actually think we're closer than we think with there being something really kind of big. Because again, it's like Apple clearly did not have much motivation for the home. They're the wearables king. And so I think that the most, if they are to get into the voice space in a meaningful way, I think it's going to be through AirPods.
Interesting. And obviously I work for a big competitor to Apple, but I will tell you, every year at SDC, I hope to hear something about Siri and voice and opening up and things and that. Because when Apple goes into a market, one, it legitimizes it. Just it's the reality of what it is. And then two, they don't do a half-assed job. When they go into something, they do it well. Mm-hmm. And so this could be a big step. So every SDC, I'm like, really? And I could I'm hoping.
I'm like,
we'll see. You know, we'll see, because I think it'll be really good for the industry.
I'm turning into a broken clock at this point, where it's at some point I should be right. I just keep saying it, but
you know, that's a futurist, right? You keep on saying the same thing. Eventually, you're right, and then you can claim victory on the year you were right.
I'll just delete all my old tweets. That
what about a little longer term? Give me a prediction 5-10 years out.
Oh, man, I don't know. I think that 5-10 years out, you're wearing bone conduction right now. Like, those are your headphones. I think that that form factor is so interesting to me because it straddles this fence of being both non-included. Like, that's the biggest detractor for AirPods long-term, in my opinion, and a lot of these earbuds, is you're going to get to a point where people really do want to wear these things for the whole day. And then I don't know societally if it's going to become acceptable to do that. There could be a kind of counterculture clash against that. And so the solution might be a different form factor. And the other really kind of crazy thing to think about is that form factor could very well look like, if not bone conduction, it could look like hearing aids, which is kind of the irony of this whole thing, is that we might actually come full circle in that the stigmatized hearing aids, actually that form factor becomes really cool because it's like this discreet, behind the ear, invisible device that nobody sees that is in your ears all day, and you can interface with this stuff all the time. So that's my prediction, is like that we're probably going to see some different form factors. And then glasses are obviously going to probably become a thing and all that. And so maybe those will have bone conduction built into them so that they're kind of interfaced into your ears too. But I don't know long-term if earbuds are actually going to be the form factor that wins out, because I think that it's going to really clash with, as usage goes up, I think that there's going to be these issues that people run into where they're like, I don't know if I like this idea where people feel like I'm kind of always closed off to the rest of the world.
What's fun, I'll share with listeners. We jumped on and we're on Zoom. That's how I do my interviews. And Dave looks at me and he's like, what you wearing on your ears, man? Are those aftershocks? Right? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I really like these bone conduction ear. Like, they just feel open and work really well for me. So you're the first person. It was the first thing you noticed. Of course, you're in the industry. You're like, what's somebody wearing, man?
I know.
I think I recognize those.
I know.
But yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah. A form factor that's socially acceptable for kind of all day, all the time wearing will be really interesting.
Yeah.
Whatever emerges there. I totally agree with that. So Dave, if people want to keep in contact with the multitude of things, yourself, what you're doing with your podcast, with Oak Tree, what are the ways to do so? And sure. I'll put these all in the show notes as well.
I appreciate that. And again, thank you. This has been so much fun. So you can connect with me. I'm the two social medias that I use primarily are Twitter and LinkedIn. So on Twitter, I'm at @OakTree_Dave. And then LinkedIn, I'm Dave Kemp. And then you can go to futureear.co, which is the blog. And there you can find all my podcast episodes. The podcast is Future Ear Radio. It's on all the different podcast players. And then this new YouTube show/podcast that I'm a part of is This Week in Hearing. Kind of a riff on Bradley Metrock's This Week in Voice. So, Bradley, thank you for paving the way.
Perfect. Well, hey, Dave, it's been a super pleasure. I came in going, wow, I'm going to talk to this expert about a bunch of things that I don't know that much about. And I learned a bunch. But now I'm hungry to learn a heck of a lot more.
I know.
Right? So that's the measure of a successful conversation to my mind, is when you're like, man, I got to go research this stuff. This is really fascinating. So thank you. You've been an amazing guest. Such very insightful about not only obviously hearing aids and hearables and voice, but the intersection and the elderly and us all, you know, what happens when we're all wearing these devices all the time. Mm-hmm. And opportunities there. So super exciting, interesting stuff to think about. Thanks for being an amazing guest.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Dave. That's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.